Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
The White Sox Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust Community Bank, home of White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. You can find out more by going to their website. Special website, Wintrust.com/Sox. That's Wintrust.com/Sox. Chuck Arfine here with Ryan McGuffey. And Guff, it's a new year. 2018 has arrived, which hopefully means that the White Sox are 1 year closer to becoming a playoff contender.
Oh, it's fair to say. They're absolutely 1 year closer because we knew going into last year that they were at least a couple years away. So this, yes.
Just when I saw the calendar flip, I'm like, oh, it's now 2018.
And I thought pitchers and catchers. I'm one of those guys like new year, new season. I don't want cold. And it's I'm not living in the right city for that. I know.
No.
But when a new year begins, I'm thinking, all right, like what's on the horizon? What are the prospects? Oh, yeah. No pun intended. But I really like, you know, the excitement of it makes me warm.
Yes. Well, since about half of our country is right now under a wind chill advisory.
Yeah.
This podcast will warm you up a few degrees. You're probably still going to be in a wind chill advisory, but just thinking about baseball will warm you up.
Yeah, no, it warms me up. I think the more we talk about it right now, it's making me feel better.
All right, so we've talked a lot about the White Sox top prospects. We've had a lot of them on the podcast, but what about some of the under the radar prospects, players not ranked in the White Sox top 10, but could eventually get there and end up being key parts of the White Sox future? It's something that I've been thinking about doing a podcast on. And to be honest with you, I've had a lot of White Sox fans over the last few months send tweets to me saying, hey, what about some of these under-the-radar guys beyond the top 10? I'm thinking, let's just do this podcast and talk to someone who knows this very well. He does this for a living. He also is one of our favorite guests, a guy who actually has ranked the White Sox the top farm system in baseball. I'm talking about Jim Callis, senior writer from MLB.com. He gave us his top five under the radar, I guess you could say list, mm-hmm. under the radar prospects. Would you call that these guys under the radar?
Yeah, because we spent so much time talking about the guys who are on the radar.
Yes.
The Michael Kopechs, Eloy Jimenez. Those are the guys because they're so close to being a part of the major league club and guys you're going to see every day that we tend to forget about the guys who are ranked outside the top 10, let's just say. And it's funny because a year ago we spent so much time dissecting 1 through 5 and 5 through 10 that we too forgot about them because we were trying to learn like who are these guys, and now it just tells you how much work the White Sox organization has done, from Rick Hahn to Nick Hostetler and all those guys, the scouting, all the stuff that took to get these guys here, how they were acquired, some guys were drafted, some guys were part of trade, some guys were the third or fourth members of a trade, so. I think it is. It's definitely worthy because good organizations have guys that come from the 20, the 25s, the 28s, and became that become a huge part of your organization going forward.
Yeah, a few years ago, these guys would be the headline prospects for the White Sox.
Yeah, and these are the guys that I've discussed this on a couple of interviews. You go back 3-4 years and look at the White Sox top 10 prospects. I'm telling you.
It's not pretty.
No. If you guys want to do it, if you want to feel better about where the White Sox are today,
yeah,
go look up the Chicago White Sox top 10 farm guys, top 10 farm players in 2013. Humor yourself a
little bit. I'd like to think that these names that Jim Callis is going to give us are better than those guys.
I'm convinced their projections of these guys are better because we know how these guys. I'll just put it that way. You know how those guys panned out because a lot of them,
it's not good. It's not pretty. Well, before we get to Jim Callis, can I share with you a dream that I had last week?
Oh boy. Yeah.
Okay. I had a dream, and I haven't told anybody this dream
including me.
I'm now telling you, and I'm telling all of our listeners because it's so random. That I'm like, I'm just going to share this. I had a dream that, when you cover the White Sox and they're on my mind a lot, I just get random dreams.
Yeah.
Okay? And if you're a White Sox fan, you probably have had your own random dream.
You're absolutely
okay?
Right.
They don't make any sense. This was my dream about 5 days ago. I had a dream that Don Cooper hit a walk-off home run for the White Sox.
While that would be a hell of a story, the White Sox would be in real bad. They'd be in shambles if Don Cooper had to go taking it back. But if he did.
I know.
Did you wake up laughing?
Yes. I was like, what is going on here? This doesn't make any sense. Why am I dreaming, A, about Don Cooper, and B, what's he doing hitting a walk-off home run for the White Sox? This doesn't make any sense.
Well, at least he was still with the White Sox.
Yes. Yes. And, like, the players came out to, like, lift him up as he crossed home plate and made him, like, the hero that he is.
Oh.
He needed about the whole, actually, team to lift up Don Cooper. I'll say it.
Yeah.
So, Don Cooper, if you happen to be listening to this podcast, congratulations on your dream walk-off home run for the White Sox.
Yeah, I don't think Don Cooper ever dreamt that because he was a pitcher. And no. He probably had where we all dreamt as like hitting a home run in the bottom of the ninth with a 3-2 count. He probably was thinking 3-2 count, strikeout, Game 7 World Series. But, you know, Coop gets his wish fulfilled. This dream is hilarious.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know who to even tell this to. So people listening to this podcast, they could understand. Or they probably don't understand it because it makes no sense. Which is why it was a dream. I'm dreaming about Don Cooper hitting home runs, walk-off home runs for the White Sox. This is my life.
We need spring training.
We do. All right, here we go. Our interview with Jim Callis from MLB.com. Let's do it. All right, on the phone is from MLB.com, MLBpipeline.com. You also see him on MLB Network. It is Jim Callis. Jim, thanks for being with us. We appreciate you joining us on this frigid cold day in Chicago.
Yeah, happy to be here. Although, frigid, come on, we hit double digits. This is like balmy, so we should be celebrating.
I know, and then I looked at the wind chill, which was still -15, -20 when I woke up, and I didn't feel like putting on the suntan lotion. I want to actually, before we get to the under-the-radar prospects, I want to ask you first about your top 10, the top 10 White Sox prospects. I mean, you named the Sox the number one farm system in baseball. Of the top 10 prospects currently, how many do you think are going to hit, become major leaguers?
I would think they would probably all become major leaguers, and I wouldn't say that about everybody's top 10. I just think, you know, they have one of the best farm systems in baseball. I don't think they're quite number one. Well, I'm trying to think. I guess I did say that, right? After the Braves got hit by the penalties, I've gone back and forth, and it's funny. We're in the process of revamping all of our rankings, and we haven't done it yet. So we don't have an official farm system for our updated rankings because those aren't out yet. But I I'm looking at the guys who are in our top 10, and again, this late, the order might change, but I mean, the top 10 as we have it right now is, you know, Eloy Jimenez, Michael Kopech, Luis Robert, Blake Rutherford, Dylan Cease, Alec Hansen. Those guys are all probably going to be on our top 100 prospects list when we do the new list at the end of January. Then you got guys like Zach Collins, Jake Berger, who probably aren't top 100 right now, but we do top 10 position lists too, and they're on the top. They'll be on the top 10 catcher and third base list. And the other two guys on the top 10 are Dane Dunning, who is more polished than any of the pitchers on our White Sox top 10, and Carson Fulmer, who I still believe in. So, I mean, realistically, will all 10 of them make it, you know, reach their ceilings? No, but I mean, barring injury, I'd be surprised if any of those guys didn't at least get a cup of coffee in the big leagues because they all are very, very talented guys.
That's great. That's mm-hmm. great to hear. All right, so you came up with five names who you feel are, in a way, under the radar in the White Sox farm system because we have these top 10 that get so much attention. But give me your first name, first guy that comes to your head that says, yeah, this is an under the radar guy in the Sox farm system who I believe will, if not surprise, is someone for Sox fans to keep an eye on.
Well, I think the first guy that jumps to mind is Mike Rodolfo. Now, you know, and it's not like he's it wasn't a big name. I mean, in 2013, he was the number two rated international prospect, and he was really the first big signing for the White Sox after the international scandal that kind of wrecked their whole international scouting department back in 2008. He was their first big signing. And he just wasn't healthy. After he came over to the U.S., he had ankle injuries, he had a Hammond injury. And this year he was finally healthy, and he hit 16 home runs in low Class A, and he looked like the profile right fielder they thought they were getting with, you know, chance to have pretty big power and well above average arm strength.
With Adolfo, let's say that he takes off from here and builds off of last year. That's a pretty good problem to have all of a sudden when you look at Eloy Jimenez. And again, I don't know what we're going to get with Avi Garcia, but you have Luis Robert and then Mike Rodolfo.
Yeah.
That could be a pretty scary outfield in the future, huh?
It could. I mean, you know, and the thing is, too, you know, you never, you know, sometimes a lot of people ask, like, oh, you know, what if you have too much? You never have too much talent. I mean, these things never work out the way. I mean, shoot, I mean, you got, you know, Blake Rutherford, too, is going to be in the mix.
Didn't even
mention
him.
You know, if Garcia's for real and all these prospects reach their ceiling, again, they don't all happen, but, I mean, they could have five outfielders for three spots. I mean, there's even some people who think that long-term, that Yoan Moncada, you might be better off just turning him loose in the outfield and doing that too. But, no, I mean, Adolfo, I mean, he had, you know, his development has been, I wouldn't even say slower than expected because, you know, these guys tend to kind of, you know, their son is 16, so they're not going to be in the big leagues in 3 years. You know, he was part of that same international class as Eloy Jimenez was. You know, the Cubs obviously signed Eloy, and Eloy didn't do a whole lot his first couple of years either, and then he started to break out, you know, in 2016. So, you know, it'll be fun to watch. I mean, I know the White Sox, I mean, for years, you know, literally years talking to them about Adolfo, they always said, oh, I just wish this guy could have a healthy season so we could see what he could do. And he did, and he made a lot of progress. And if he gets another healthy season, you know, he might not be too far away from the big leagues.
I just wanted to add this little comment because I know we're about to get to the other names that you have here on this list. And you mentioned Adolfo, his development is, what it might be slower, but he's the youngest name on this five guys that we're looking out for that are under the radar. So he's still 21, born in, you know, September of 96. So it's kind of eye-popping sometimes when everybody wants this, you know, instant gratification, and they're locked in on the prospects, but you forget that these guys are still 20, 21 years old.
Well, especially the international guys. I mean, if he was a U.S. kid, you know, let's say he'd gone to college, he'd be a junior this spring. He'd be draft eligible this spring, and instead he's going to be in high class A. So even though, like I said, you know, he signs in 13, he makes his debut in 14, and it seems like he moves slow because of these injuries, I mean, he's going to be ahead of where your typical college junior who's going to be the same age would be coming out of the draft this year.
Yeah, so he was in Kannapolis, low class A. You think high class A Winston-Salem in 2018 and maybe moving up to double A this season?
I would think probably more maybe stay there for the whole year unless he just really tears it up because, again, you know, for his age, you know, because of the injuries, he hasn't played as much as you might think, and I would just let him continue to build. I mean, he needs to tighten the strike zone, but he did make a lot of progress in 2017. I would just let him tear up high class A because, like I said, I mean, he's still going to be ahead of the game. If he's in high class A at age 21, then maybe next year I worry, you know, start him in 2019, I'd start him in double A and maybe worry about in-season promotion. I mean, unless he just destroys the Carolina League, in which case maybe you move up that timetable.
Okay, so who do you have after Adolfo?
Well, a guy who kind of gets overlooked, I think, because, well, A, the system's deep, but B, you know, the last two drafts, they spent the first-round picks on two of the best power hitters in college baseball. They got Zach Collins and Jake Berger, you know, the last two first-round picks. Well, this year's second-round pick, also big-time power hitter out of college, Gavin Sheets. He's the son of former big leaguer Larry Sheets. Nice year at Wake Forest this season. You know, and he's a big physical guy. I mean, he's 6'4", 230. But you know, he has hitting ability too. He's not just one of these guys who it's all or nothing power. I mean, he's got a pretty good approach at the plate. He's obviously a big guy with some strength. You know, he walks almost as much as he struck out. Didn't hit for a ton of power in his pro debut. Neither did Berger really. But he did make consistent contact and wasn't fazed by going to low class A at all. So I think he's a guy who could probably, his profile will probably raise as he gets a full season in. And, I mean, he, you know, I could see him hitting 280 with 20-plus homers at Winston-Salem and getting a lot more attention this year.
Yeah, I was going to follow up on that because he led the ACC with 21 home runs. He goes to Kannapolis, and he only hit three. So how do you read into that he finally, not finally, but he gets into the minor leagues and the power wasn't there initially?
I don't worry about that. I mean, Jake Berger, like I said, didn't hit for a lot of power either. Berger put a lot of balls on the ground. You know, Sheets, I mean, there were some scouts, like area guys, who wondered a little bit about how he'd catch up to pro fastballs, but, like, it wasn't like he was striking out a ton. And sometimes, I mean, one, you got to realize these guys, I mean, this was the longest baseball year of his career. You know, he played a full college season, and then he played, you know, 56 games in pro ball on top of that, too. So could have been some fatigue there. The White Sox are usually pretty aggressive about challenging guys. I mean, a lot of teams send their college guys to short season, not low Class A, you know, where they're basically facing other guys who just came out of the draft. So, you know, he's facing better pitching than he ever saw before. So I didn't read too much into it. I mean, yeah, would I like to see him hit more than 4 homers in 56 games? I would, but the fact that he made consistent contact and he continued to draw walks and he hit for average, that showed me he wasn't overmatched. And, you know, he probably has an understanding now of some adjustments he needs to make, and I think we'll learn a lot more about him this year.
Okay, who else you got on your list?
Okay, well, the third guy I'd have on my list would be Jordan Stevens, who was a fifth-round pick out of Rice in 2015. He was a guy with Tommy John surgery in college. He was a redshirt junior when they signed him. And, you know, the thing is about him is, you know, because, again, he was a little bit older when they got drafted and they've gone out and made all these trades, I think he gets overlooked a little bit. But he's got a plus curveball, low 90s fastball, throws a solid amount of strikes. He's been pretty healthy in pro ball. He had some forearm tendonitis last year, but came back and pitched well in Double A after that. I do think there's a good chance. He's not a big guy. Like I said, his medical history isn't the best. I could see him winding up in the pen and really relying on that curveball, but maybe being a guy who's a factor in the seventh inning. Just with all the pitchers, I mean, they already have more starting pitching prospects than they have, you know, spots in rotation, like we're talking about the outfielders. So some of these guys will wind up in the pen. And I just think, you know, he'd pick up a little velocity. The curveball can definitely, you know, work right on right. And I can see Jordan Stevens, when the White Sox are contending in a couple of years, then maybe he's pitching that seventh inning for him on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about that because of the depth of pitching, that at some point you're going to have to look at some of these guys being in the pen or pieces in trades later on. But it's good that you bring up Stevens. What is his timeline? Because he's an older guy. He's 25. Is it something where he may, depending on how he does, is he going to start in AAA? Will he have a chance to come up and get some of that, maybe that late inning role that you're talking about in 2018 now?
Well, I think he definitely goes to AAA. I mean, he pitched well in Double A when he pitched after he missed the first couple months last year. Yeah, I would assume you keep him in the rotation for now because it's not like they're going to contend in 2018. He has yet to show that he can't handle starting. I mean, he pitched well as a starter in Double A. And you know what? Sometimes guys, you know, they exceed expectations too. You know, maybe he sneaks into the rotation and he's the number five guy. So I would think they continue to use him as a starter this year. You know, I just think long term, maybe he moves to the pen just because I think they have guys who have higher ceilings as starters than he does, and maybe he gets pushed aside. But I can really see him being a factor, like I said. I think his temperament and his stuff would fit well in that role.
All right, let's move on to your fourth under-the-radar prospect with the White Sox.
Yeah, and that would be Ian Clarkin. You know, and it's funny calling him under the radar because he was a first-round pick in 2013. Actually, the Yankees' third first-round pick. They had three that year, the second of whom was Eric Judge, and then the first of whom was Eric Jigailo, who I believe is a Illinois high school product. He was drafted out of Notre Dame. But, you know, Clarkin's a guy who, you know, kind of your classic lefty who can really pitch. You know, he's missed time. He had ankle and elbow injuries. It didn't require surgery. He tore a meniscus in his knee. He was part of the big Todd Frazier, David Robertson, Tommy Canley trade with the Yankees, where Blake Rutherford was the headliner. You know, and it's, I don't know if he's got a plus pitch, you know, but he's got, you know, a 90-95 mile an hour fastball and three solid secondary pitches and throws a decent amount of strikes. I think he's got to refine his command a little bit more. But you know, this is a guy who's going to be 23 all next season. He'll probably move up to Double A, is where he's slated for. And you're talking about a lefty who could have four solid pitches. You know, probably, you know, a guy who, if you're looking for a realistic expectation, you know, maybe you slot him in as a number four starter if everything works out. You know, and if it doesn't, I do think that he's another guy that if you put in the bullpen, he's got a pretty good curveball and the velocity would pick up a little bit. He'd be a nice weapon out of the bullpen. Plus, because he has multiple pitches, I don't think you'd have to talk about this guy just being a left-on-left specialist. He's a guy who could you know, maybe pitch, you know, like a seventh-inning role as a lefty, getting lefties and righties out. So be interested to see. You know, he's the type of guy who he's rarely had a full, healthy season. I would like to see what he does with that if he gets the opportunity. And plus, I mean, the White Sox, I mean, we've seen it a number of times. They do a great job developing pitchers and cleaning guys up. And, you know, maybe they can unlock something in him, too.
Yeah, I feel like a few years ago, a guy like Ian Clarkin would be, I don't want to say a headline-grabbing prospect for the White Sox, but he would be moving.
Sure.
He'd be way up the list, and now he's. I mean, I've called it's kind of under the radar just because they don't get the headlines that the Michael Kopechs and the Jimenezes are getting in with the White Sox farm system. I mean, this is a guy who, like you said, he could be a very established major league starter in the future, right?
Yeah, I mean, he could. I mean, I think you know he's got to stay healthy, obviously, and that's
right.
Something he hasn't been able to do. But if he does that, I mean, you're talking about a guy, if you dream a little bit, he could be a number three, and he definitely, you could project him as a four or five, and he's a former first-round pick. And, you know, you're right. I mean, before they started drafting better and making these blockbuster trades, a guy like Ian Clarkin, you know, would probably stand out as one of the very best pitching prospects in the organization. And now, you know, he's behind guys like Kopech and Alec Hanson and Dylan Cease and Dane Dunning and Carson Fulmer, and I go on and on and on and on. I mean, they just have a ton of guys. Like, I mean, a guy we're not talking about, who I like, but I wish he missed more bats. I mean, Spencer Adams was a guy who a couple of years ago was number two or three on the list, and now he's, you know, number 13 on our list for midseason at this point, and he might even get passed by a couple more guys as we you know, re-rank the list going into spring training.
All right, so who's your fifth guy?
Fifth guy would be Evan Skoug, who they drafted last year in the seventh round. He's another Illinois high school product, went to TCU. And, you know, it's funny how the draft works. You know, he was a guy who, coming out of high school, probably could have gone in the top three rounds if he would have signed. And instead, he went to TCU. And he led TCU to three College World Series in 3 years, was a cleanup hitter almost from day one, Big 12 Player of the Year, or Co-Player of the Year last year. And he was... I don't even know how to, you know, he kind of came into last year as a guy who had a chance. You know, he's an offensive catcher. If he, you know, he's kind of like a Zach Collins, where the offense is ahead of the defense. And if you liked him as a catcher, and catchers always get drafted higher than you expect, that maybe he could have snuck into the first round. And instead, he was horrible in the first half of the season, like what just terrible. And his stock nosedived, but then he came back. Like I said, he was Big 12 Player of the Year. He hit 20 home runs. Drove in 71 runs in about 65 games. Did finish with one strikeout shy of the NCAA record. But anyway, so like after all that, it, in a weird sort of way, the fact that he was so bad but then bounced back from it, like everybody's always loved this guy's makeup. You know, I think it actually, in a weird sort of way, people had even a little bit more respect for Skoug that he didn't just let the bad start, and it was an awful start, bury him in his draft year, and then he came back. And so I thought he was probably going to go in the third round still, and because catchers get overdrafted second round, and he went in the seventh round. And when he went in the seventh round, I'll be honest, I figured, well, geez, he must be asking for a lot of money, and that's why he fell. And he signed for a little over slot at $300,000, but like that was, you know, I mean, I just think that was a good case of pouncing on a guy who fell. Now he does need to clean up the catching. I mean, everybody lauds his work ethic. They laud his leadership skills. There's some question about the catching. I mean, he's not a great athlete. He's not real quick. His receiving ability is a little limited. His arm is kind of fringy, but he has a quick release. But, you know, by point of comparison, I never thought Kyle Schwarber was going to be a catcher. And Skoug has a chance. So it's not where you're kind of wishing and hoping. Skoug has a chance. It comes down to, you know, is he athletic enough to make it work? But, you know, he can hit for power. You know, I think he learned a lesson. I think he tried to do a little bit too much this year at TCU at the beginning of the year. And he knows that, you know, he's at his best when he doesn't let the swing get long and he hits all fields rather than swinging for the fences. But I think, I mean, this is a guy who only ranks 24th on our midseason White Sox top 30 that we did in July. You know, but you're talking about a guy that if he figures the catching part out, could be pretty good. And if he doesn't, I still think there could be a role for him where maybe he's a backup. You know, if he hits enough, the power's definitely there, and you have an offensive-minded backup, maybe if you pair him with a defensive-minded starter. But, you know, like I said, the makeup's really good. He hits left-handed, which is a bonus. And there's another guy who, you know, 3-4 years ago, a guy like that would – you know, easily, you know, be knocking on the door to the top 10.
Yeah, we'd be raving about Evan Skoug. He would be the future of the organization a few years ago for the White Sox if they didn't have the guys in front of them.
Yeah, I have a couple questions. Well, I wanted to jump on that Schwarber comment you just made.
Sure.
Do you think he has Schwarber-like power? Put the catching part aside. Do you think he has Schwarber-like power in terms of the bat?
No. I mean, okay. They're different types of players. It's like, you know, I was just thinking from the standpoint, if you tell Chicago fans, they might not be able to catch, they think of Schwarber, and I always thought the Schwarber strike. Look, Schwarber's work ethic, and we all know Kyle Schwarber, if he listens to your podcast, is probably going, you know, screw this Jim Callis guy said I can't catch. Because, I mean, he did have a chip on his shoulder about it, but I just remember every scout I talked to that spring, I'd say, you know, do you think Kyle Schwarber can catch? And everybody would start off by saying, oh, you know, he works so hard, you know, he's going to get everything he has, and all, yada, yada, yada. And I'd be like, wait a minute, I'm not asking you, is he going to work at it? Because that is a big part of the battle. And they're like, no, it's just really not going to work. And to be honest, I actually think he's better off not catching. I'd rather get 100% of what Kyle Schwarber has to offer offensively than have him in the lineup on a regular basis. And I know he had an up-and-down year, but I'd rather have that than have him catch 100 games a year and be beat up and give me not be in the lineup as much and give me less offense. So I was just throwing that out there more as a comparison. I think Kyle has more power than Skaug. I mean, Skaug is probably more of that, you know, 15 to 20 homer guy. You know, 20 might be a little extreme as a catcher. You know, where we saw Schwarber hit 30 in a bad year, and I do think, despite the rough year, I do think Kyle Schwarber is a better pure hitter than Evan Skaug. I mean, I still think there's a Kyle Schwarber in there where he could hit you 275 with 30 plus homers and a bunch of walks. We may see that guy in the next year or two. Where Skaug, I think, is more of a, you know, probably 250, you know, maybe 260, you know, like I said, 15, you know, maybe 20 homers because the ball does fly at Guaranteed Rate Park. I think Schwarber definitely has the higher offensive ceiling, but Scow's got a better chance to catch.
All right, up next, more of our conversation with Jim Callis from MLB.com and MLBPipeline.com. We're back in a moment. Keep your money local. Bring it home to a Wintrust Community Bank, home of White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at Wintrust.com/Sox, members FDIC.
Hi, guys. I'm Tara Lipinski.
And I'm Johnny Weir.
Guess what, Johnny?
What?
The Winter Olympics are right around the corner. And what does that mean?
Yay. That means we get to see Shaun White, Michaela Schifrin, and other top Team USA athletes conquer fresh snow and ice this February on NBC.
So make sure you're ready. Sign up for NBC Sports and Olympics emails by texting POD to 66866, or you can visit nbcolympics.com/newsletters to receive the latest athlete updates, giveaways, and more.
Message and data rates may apply. Winter is here.
Give us an off-the-radar player, someone who you were Sox fans may not even be hearing about. I mean, there's a lot of diehards who listen to this podcast, so maybe they've heard of this person. But give me a name of someone who, you know, is not even in your top, you know, 30, who you feel like, hey, look out for this guy.
Yeah, and, you know, and I think he probably is a guy that that people haven't heard a lot about because he's fairly new to the organization. And that would be Daniel Palka, who's claimed off waivers from the Twins in early November. And now, obviously, we're talking about guys who do. I mean, even your good farm systems, you know, the guy's on the top 30. We're not projecting this guy to be necessarily a big league all-star. But, I mean, Daniel Palka can play. I mean, he broke a finger this year, so he missed some time. He only played 84 games. But, you know, he was in AAA. But the 3 years of last year, in 2016, he had 34 homers. The year before that, he had 29 homers and 24 steals and high A ball. And the guy has hit pretty much everywhere he's been. I mean, he is going to swing and miss some, but he still manages to always seems like he hits around 270 or so with a lot of power. And even though he's a big guy at 6'2", 220, he moves pretty well. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a big stolen base guy in the big leagues, but he's not just a base clogger. You know, hits left-handed. I think this guy could have a role as a, you know, reserve, you know, corner outfielder. You know, he probably plays some first base, or you could work him out there too. I mean, he does have some legitimate left-handed power, and he's got track record of success. So it's, you know, I kind of liken him, and I don't know how good this guy's going to be in the long run. But, you know, I mean, Daniel Palka is, you know, turned 26 in the offseason, but he kind of reminds me, you know, kind of like a guy like a Nicky Delmonico, who, you know, kind of toiled, you know, 5 or 6 years in the minors. And, you know, Nicky obviously went through some stuff early in his career, and Palka hasn't had problems like that. But, you know, Nicky gets to the big leagues, gets a chance, and he was pretty good, you know, in the last 2 months of last year. And I just think if Palka gets a chance to run into some playing time, I think he could hit for some power in the big leagues.
All right, I want to ask you about this one guy. I don't know too much about him, but the White Sox acquired him from the Mariners in November in exchange for some international bonus pool money, and that is, I don't know if I'm even saying his name right, Thiago Vieira?
Correct.
Okay. I mean, this guy, I saw him, he threw one scoreless inning in the majors last year versus the Orioles. He has lights out stuff. What can you tell us about him? And could he potentially make the major league roster as a bullpen piece in 2018?
I think he definitely could make the roster. I don't think he makes it. When you talk about guys making out spring training, that might be up in the air just because White Sox aren't going to really contend and you run into service time issues, so who knows. You know, how they're going to look at things like that, although they do need a lot of bullpen help. But, no, I mean, he's got, from a pure stuff standpoint, I mean, you can look at this guy and dream closer. I mean, he usually pitches 97 to 100 miles an hour with a fastball. He touches 102, and he's got a power curveball. You know, I think if he's not a closer, you could at least see this guy as a setup man. I think with him, it's just going to come down to throwing strikes. I mean, he doesn't have the greatest history of throwing strikes. That's going to ultimately determine, you know, the control and command. You know, is he a setup guy? Is he a closer? Or do you have to sell for a little less than that because his stuff, you know, doesn't always find the zone? But I would think, I mean, if you're just going on merit, you know, unless he's really wild in spring training, I find it hard to believe. The average team carries, what, 8 relievers now? There's no way he's not one of the best 8 relievers, in the White Sox organization right now.
All right, Jim. So obviously we're talking about a depth of a system when we're talking specifically about these guys that we've talked about. But and a lot of things could happen. Some of these guys could be packaged in the next year or two for a big trade to get an established veteran or something like that. But of the names you gave us, who is most likely to have the biggest success, whether it's for the White Sox or another major league team? Which of these guys is most likely going to have the best success in the major leagues?
You mean my guys?
Yeah,
off.
Yeah, these five guys you gave us, under the radar.
Under the radar. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would go. I'll go Gavin Sheets. I think Adolfo's got the higher ceiling. I think Sheets has a better feel for hitting, so he's a safer bet. And I don't just think safe like I'm taking the easiest way out, but I just think like he's. When you look at the three, you know, the two guys, Stevens and Clark, and the two pitchers I mentioned could become relievers. And so then if you're looking at the position guys, I think there's more risk with Adolfo. And Skaug, like I said, there's a lot of questions as to whether he can catch. I just think Sheets is going to hit at least for a decent average with solid power. So I think Sheets is probably the best bet. And he's probably, you know, I wasn't factoring this really into my answer, he's probably the least blocked. I mean, you know, depending on what happens with Jose Abreu, if Abreu moves to DH, there really aren't any first base prospects in Gavin Sheets' way. You know, Scout's got Zach Collins ahead of him. You know, Adolfo's got all those outfielders we were talking about ahead of him. So I would say Sheets probably has the easiest path to success, if that's the best way to put it.
All right, so when I see him, the guy that I see, and this is the ceiling guy for Sheets, he seems like if he was to reach his utmost potential, he would be like Justin Morneau. What do you think about that?
I hope.
Well, I said if he reached his utmost potential, like, I don't know. That's just like
Justin Morneau is an MVP, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know.
Okay, maybe not. But you see what I'm saying? He's a lefty bat. He kind of looks like him a little bit. He's a big guy.
He's a hitter, though, man. Morneau could hit. I think he won a batting title. I don't even remember.
Well, I'm not saying he's Justin Morneau.
He did in Colorado. Yeah,
I'm not saying he's Justin Morneau right now. I'm just saying.
I'll give it to you in the sense that, like, I don't think he's – I don't think he has that same ceiling. But I do think if you want to say, like, bigger-bodied, left-handed hitter with some power who could also hit for some average, that's fair. Well, how about if we give him a poor man's Justin Morneau?
Yeah, there okay. we go. Okay.
I'll give you a poor man's Justin Morneau.
Yeah, I wasn't saying he's going to be Justin Morneau.
I like that.
But I just – yeah, he's like a poor man's Justin Morneau.
Okay.
I mean, I'll take that for the second round pick.
Jim got you over. Yeah, Jim corrected you a little bit. It was good.
That's
your
all right.
Poor man's Justin Morneau is good.
Awesome. Well, hey.
I have one more question for you before we let you go, Jim.
Okay.
Sure.
This doesn't pertain to necessarily the guys we've talked about. This is any guy in the White Sox system. Give us one player in the last year. So January of this time last year to now that's taken the biggest leap.
I think it's probably got to be Alec Hansen. Now, Alec did come in and have a really nice debut in 2016, but it was, you know, somewhat of a smaller sample size. And he went out this year, or I keep saying this year, last year, 2017, and led the minor leagues in strikeouts with 191, and he got to Double A. and you know, and look great. I mean, this is a guy, I mean, for, I don't know how much your listeners know about his background, who going into 2016 had a chance. He was on the short list of guys who had a chance to go number one overall in the entire draft. And then his control just completely disintegrated. He wound up in the bullpen at Oklahoma and just had a horrible year. I mean, there was no two ways about it. And the White Sox took him. I guess it was their third. It was second round pick, but I think their third pick, because they took Collins and Zach Birdie in the first round. And they just simplified his delivery a little bit to try to keep him in sync better. And like I said, he had a pretty strong pro debut, small sample size. And then last year he came out and you know, not only led the minors to strikeouts, I mean, the walk rate was very respectable after not being good in the past, you know, especially in college. Very tough to hit. He got double A. I mean, going into the year, you know, I think everybody's attitude, well, maybe not the White Sox, but, you know, from those of us who evaluate prospects for a living, I think everybody's attitude was, okay, nice debut. Let's see what happens when he gets to pro ball over a full season. And, I mean, he made 26 starts. He dominated from start to finish. So I'd say Alec Hansen. I mean, he's not the best pitching prospect in the system, because Michael Kopech, you know, has an argument for being the best pitching prospect in all of baseball. But to me, Alec Hansen is the clear number two pitching prospect in the system, ahead of guys like Dylan Cease and Dane Dunning and Carson Fulmer.
All right, good stuff. Mm-hmm. Jim Callis, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it, as always.
Yeah, great talking to you guys.
All right, the White Sox Talk podcast brought to you by Wintrust Community Bank, home of White Sox. Checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at Wintrust.com/Sox. That's Wintrust.com/Sox, and we'll talk to you soon.